Thanks, Jen.
The chief territory is Libya. Has printed labor relations. So the indicator around legal and court judgment is actually both a legal indicator and a labor relations indicator. So the actual number of four raised to the fraud and corruption cases that was driven by the territory legal under, I mean, territory labor relations under legal, the chief territory. So there were fraud, corruption cases, and those were dealt with. 100% back then. But with regard to default judgment, the department, the past 4 years, had a huge pool of default judgments, where you will have a sheriff of the court just rocking up in the department, you will have a case that you never defended, and therefore lost as a default judgment. And the sheriff will come and also attach goods in an office. So the past 4 years, we then had a program to ensure that we steadily reduce our default judgment from a huge number that goes in hundreds. But now at least we are working on that problem, and we've reduced them even now to a point of zero. Because we are dealing with them. Each paper that are filed at each department with a system that cuts across the whole department, including into regions, that ensure that it's each and every case, whatever the case is, either with negotiated settle or with challenging court and decide it. But insofar as vacancies are concerned, I think they are very clement in this. We came with the target of advertised position within a period of 4 months. The more used to take as much as 12 months, sometimes even more, to fill in position. So we had to force ourselves to reach a much more stringent target. That at the point of advertisement, we give ourselves the next 4 months to ensure those votes are filled. Now, because our budget is limited, but also because we're using the old structure, we've had the new structure now approved, which means then there will be a shift. We'll have to advertise now the position that arrives from the new structure. But this report is based on the old structure, where ETCO will identify that the priority for that water instance will be these positions. Once then they're placed in front of the human resource unit, they will ensure that those ones meet the target as set, that one target. So there were 90 for this past quarter, and yes, they were advertised and filled, all of the offices. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. There are two questions that I briefly would like to address with regard to the Expand Public Works Program. And the first one is the matter of how the non-profit organizations, how they are monitored in a way, contracted. We have been in most state sector was reduced as part of the Expand Public Works Program, very clear criteria and set. It's important to do forge appropriate partnerships with the civil society through non-profit organizations. But what there's a big danger in terms of fly-by-nighters, so to speak. Therefore, very clear criteria has been set then, amongst others. That they should be registered with the Department of Social Development, they should be with the SARS, should be a very clear track record of performance, so we can piggyback on them. And then we also conduct regular site visits to as part of the policy. Second question was with regard to recruitment and payment of workers. The way that this is monitored is through therapy for basically we introduced what we call universal principles for public employment programs that we set, and there are four main ones, and the selection or recruitment of workers, that's one of those. The others, so-called the minimum wage, labor intensity, that they should work, public employment programs should work for the public good. And with regard to recruitment of workers, the whole purpose of the recruitment guidelines that we have compiled was to address the question of obviously patronage and the whole range of other ills that could be solved public employment programs. And so but we also then have regular monthly reporting to talk to the issue of payment, which means we that is consolidated on a quarterly basis at IMAS. And then lastly, in this regard also, we have the other projects. We also conduct a cybersecurity standard template where we check on certain basic data fields because we know that the AG would be looking at also. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll try and just see which are pending that may not be answered by the head of PMT, Abhishek Ashutey. The first one that I think I need to respond to is the 30-day payments question. There's been a number of those questions that I'll try and summarize in terms of my answer to try and capture all the issues raised with respect to the 30-day payments report. One is, I'm not sure, the PSC report that's been referred to, I'm not sure which one it is, so that I can be very specific. So the last report that I saw of the PSC, I think went back to 1314 that spoke to this matter, which is fairly historical. Now, if you really go back, I think you will recall that at that time, the department was really at a very, very low level of operation, low level of performance. And hence, this could result. This could be the reason. So I'm not sure which PSC report reference we made to. However, what I can report is that, given the low base where we come from of the 30-day payments situation to comply with the 30-day payment, 86% is an improvement, significant kind of improvement, in the context of where we're coming from. I think I need to acknowledge that, in essence, any percentage lower than 100% in the matter is not compliance and is not actually achieving the objectives. So the plan and the target is for 100%. However, given the base from where we are coming from, as a department, as a PMT, where this was a real challenge to the environment that we had then, the 86 is a kind of an improvement, and it's been an improvement over the years. Since then, so 13, 14, 15, and 15, 16, we've seen those kind of significant improvements. And one needs to look at the reasons for, you know, given the business that we are in, why would we have such a, or why would the 100% compliance be a difficult target to achieve? Not to say that it's an impressive target to achieve, but I'm just saying it's a difficult, a challenging target to achieve. Is that, you know, the environment is a very complex environment, I mean, that we operate under. We have an operating environment where we operate in 9 provinces, having 11 regional offices that service the entire country. And if you look at the nature of the work that you do, and the nature of the service provider and contractor that you may have, this becomes a very difficult thing to manage. If you are sitting in Kimberley, for instance, where the regional offices of the Public Works Department, or PMT, and you are doing a magistrate office in Port Vale, before you can pay that work that has been done, you need to certify the work that has been done. It means you got to travel from Kimberley to Port Vale, go and sort of work, sign the invoice, and then get it corrected. So those are the kind of challenges that we are faced with. And secondly, I mean, even though we can make some assumptions about, you know, qualifying invoices and that, but to really attempt to get a qualifying invoice and being on the ground really, you know, teaches one a lot of things. But to get a service provider to provide a qualifying invoice at times is a very daunting task. Why? Because we have this complex SU system. It's a supply chain management system with a lot of requirements in terms of compliance. And this system, which is so complex, presupposes that you have a core of providers, a core of people to manage it and be able to comply with it at all times. And that's, in fact, not necessarily the case. So there's a back and forth before you can say, I've got all the documentation, they are ready for me to process the payment, and by then 2-3 months I'll have a client and you are late. But there's no justification. I think where we are sitting now, I think we put systems and processes in place that we are rolling out to make sure that we can at least achieve the thing. One is from a department-wide perspective. We have introduced what we spoke about earlier on as part of our reforms, an enterprise resource system, integrating financial system with the operating system in such a way that there is there's a lot of, or we maximize the automation of our processes in the department. And by just more automation, we can improve the staff payments, our processes, from 80% to 90%, just up touching in some second. Secondly, the question of monitoring the scene. You know, quite frankly, there are instances where officials can sit with an invoice and not claim. And I think what we've got to do with that, and we started to put that in place, is to ensure that when an invoice comes and it's late, we demand answers from that official who's responsible for that, or the manager of that project. And if those reasons are not satisfactory, there must be consequence management to ensure that people must come forward to the scene. And I mean, there's various reasons why that can be the case, oversight, but it could be unscrupulous reasons. And that's why the focus and the emphasis is going to be on consequence management. And that process has started to happen like quite vigorously.
Just a two-finger there, Chair, if I may. I'm looking to the tense you are using. You're saying it's going to happen. There really should be consequences. It should. So there's nothing on the ground now. No consequences if they sit with invoices for a year on the desk. That's my concern.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Please continue. And then...
Honourable Member, that is what is happening now. And what I'm saying is, because you started to intensify those efforts, you'll see the benefits of those even coming forth as you go along now. It's because we are now dealing with those things. We issue letters, our letters set up systems, a computer system that generates, because we've got an invoice tracking system, automatically tracks the invoices, it checks whether there are over 30 days, who is responsible manager, and automatically issues a letter that comes to me, signed, goes to the person, go to HR, and call the case. That's how we're going to do it, and that's how we're doing it now. So we see the benefits of those efforts as we go along. So yes, I think we will manage to see, and I must admit, honorable members, we are not where we are supposed to be. We've got to pay within the stipulated 30 days, and I think we cannot overemphasize the dire consequences of not complying with the scene to the African economy, small and micro, medium-sized enterprises, and all that. It's not a really nice thing to see happening because of, well, you know, the consequences that are there. And the question around the audit issues, are we focusing our work in resolving the audit issues? I think it's,
and
you know...
Just before you okay. Go to the next point you want to make, in regard to the issue that was raised by yourself, consequence management, and the Honourable Member said that the tent is the future tent. It would help if you could give us an indication of time frames. When is it going to be operative? Is it the next month, the next 3 months, so that the next time that we meet, we can ask you for progress in regard to this? Otherwise, it's a good intention, but it has no time frames. There's nobody we are going to resuscitate in the ICU. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Like I indicated, I said, we've already introduced systems that assist us in building up, you know, a portfolio of evidence for us to implement cost management. It's already happening. Like I said, we've got an invoice tracking system that tracks the invoices, checks the age of the invoice, and whenever there's an exception, a letter gets issued, we demand answers, and the answers are not adequate, a letter gets issued of warning to people. That's already happening. In terms of our acting on those kind of things, I think we need to build a case and then we can start that process. So that's already started. So I guess, I mean, in the next 3 to 6 months, we'll see a whole lot of these things happening. In terms of disciplinary hearings, coming on as a result of those management of a consequence. Yeah. Okay. And then, in terms of the audit issues, are we responding to the audit findings?
So the indicating to what the CFO is
Oh, yes. There's something that you have to share with us. You said it has been developed, the system. Have you workshopped with the relevant provinces? Because if they are saying that within 6 months, we must know whether you have workshopped, they understand it, they know it.
Yes, Honorable Chair and Member, the system that you've developed, we call it Reabata. That's what it's called. And it's linked to our works for you.
Honorable Kola Barnett is checking as to what does Reabata mean. It means we are paid. We are paid.
Thanks for the translation. We are paid. It's we developed it in-house, and I think it's one of those kind of things that the head of PMT mentioned about the benefits of skilling yourself appropriately. I think we have an IT environment that is highly energized by highly energetic individuals who do all sorts of things like the portal and all the services, including the university system that we have. So that system is already operational, it's running, and it's not going to be a resuscitated confidential. It's happening as we are talking right now, and we will be using it quite extensively. In terms of the provinces, we have already, this system is a national public works system. We have trained all our regional offices in offices that belong to public works and national departments. Everybody is using it. The people who are within the environment of payments and FCM and project managers. They're using it. They're fully well trained in terms of the user system. The training happened August, December, January throughout the country. I convened what you call a CFO forum. It's a CFOs, a forum of CFOs of myself as the head national department CFO and the nine provincial CFOs. We have a forum where we meet. We have made a presentation of this system to the CFO forum. The CFOs in that forum were keen on utilizing that system. I was indicated that they want to use it immediately, and all that. So our ITCT branch or unit is interacting with the individual provinces around that matter. And it's we don't want to impose it upon them. Is that they should try and consider it to use them. We are interacting with individual provinces on a case-by-case basis for the utilization of the system. I was just getting on to responding to the audit actions, audit issues. Yes, we do. After every audit, we draw up. You know, what you get as an audit when the audit ends, you get an audit report, which is just a two-pager or so. Then you've got what you call a management letter. A management letter would list all the things that auditors have found. And then what happens is, we take all those things, it could be hundreds and hundreds of things, we look them up, categorize them, and use those things to draw up an audit finding action plan, so that each and every individual item is acted upon. We put who's responsible for that, when are they supposed to do it, and that's how we manage the audit outcomes. And the kind of thing that honorable member Colabana mentioned, the level of expenditure, for instance, that this is used to be historically the issue of the department. And I say deliberately historically. If you look at the history of the department of PMDE, you go back to 2009-10, between disclaimers, 10-11, 12-13, and the basis of the disclaimers in terms of Colasca have been a main contributor of that has been irregular expenditure. Look at our audit report today. You will not find irregular expenditure as an audit finding. I think that is the one thing I wanted to say. We had a huge number that disclosed 2-3 years of irregular expenditure. Which number was a consequence of the work that you put into ensuring that we go back and identify all irregular expenditure that goes back many years. We went through quite a significant number of transactions. Big number of transactions, but they are high rent value, and identified transactions that came to a big number that was in regular expenditure. We have dealt with those quite aggressively, trying with ourselves and the National Treasury. We still have a balance going back to coming back from the past, which we are managing and sitting in the accounts But from where we are coming from, I think we have a good handle of this general expenditure to the extent that the Auditor General does not raise any audit findings with respect to general expenditure. Yeah. And the issues around, you know, market tariffs that were referred to, whether we collect the monies, these are the currencies that we are acting on a regular basis. The issue of the collection of monies, I think we had reported before, that the extent of our money sustaining from our time departments go back many years, as far as back as before 2006, 2003, to Saturday, you know. And when we started to do an efficiency enhancement or a turnaround in the department, that was one of our biggest headache, and it remained a headache even today up until we resolved those issues there. But what the cost of that was the loss of documentation, the disputes. You could not actually get to the actual issues why the payments were not made. But not today. That number has been reduced to a significant number. And those that are not collected today are not because the departments themselves don't want to pay. It's because those departments, the monies that they have from their baseline has been returned to National Treasury. So we are giving the Treasury to see how we will then now get the money out of those departments. Treasury must find a way to do it. Or otherwise, you know, maybe we'll have to write off the amounts because the departments don't have the money in their baseline. But in the context of the fact that this is all within this wheel of, you know, government, it's Robin Paul to pay Peter. It all comes from St. Paul. We've got to find a way of dealing with this. And, I think that's... Then there's a question on... consultants. I think we should agree that we should come and provide a committee with a detailed presentation on consultants. We'd want to do that, and I think we can do it. We can schedule it and program it in terms of the meeting that go forward, that we must do a presentation on consultants to just give a sense of where we're going. Are we going north or south in terms of the spend? But I must mention that part of our minimum criteria when we engage civil providers and consultants, local consultants, is that as per the terms of reference, we ensure that one of the compliance requirements or criteria is skills development and transfer. That's what we insist on. And we manage the program as we roll out the project. And I can give you an example of the key order project when we started off, that we did that, exactly that, and that happened. In addition to that, we also say, over and above these skills transferred to our current employees, we also need you to get future employees of the department. Like, you've got a whole lot of unemployed graduates. I mean, the debt base on unemployed graduates is staggering high. And we engage these graduates, give them an opportunity, put them into an internship program with a view to employing them. And the team of the project, we engage about 96 of the 106 of these unemployed graduates. At the end of the day, 46 today are employed in the department on a full-time basis. The balance, we've lost it to the rest of the South African economy being employed elsewhere. That's part of our contribution. So that's how we work on the thing. We do not see consultants come, do work, and disappear, and then we start, because one of the indicators of a successful turnaround program is how you sustain it going beyond the actual program and engagement of consultants. I think we will agree that at the beginning of a turnaround, because of the depth of capacity in terms of the human resource capacity in the department, in the right areas, we have to employ consultants because these were interventions. So the expenditure went all the way up. But it would not be at that level today, it's at a much lower level, because we still haven't got the right capacity, everybody on board. We just got a new structure approved by National Treasury and the DPSA, and we're starting to roll out that structure in the next year, and hence the ability to reduce this in quite expenses. On the goods and services, 16% expenditure, the question that I asked Honorable Drop was that you've introduced your cost-containment measures, but you introduce your cost-containment measures to the extent that you compromise service delivery. And the answer to that is not really. Why? Because that is goods and services which are expenditures that are related to 90% of which to the operating expenditure in the office. It's your travel. So it is just a question of, oh, instead of going around the country in aeroplanes, why don't you use your video conferencing facility? We've introduced video conferencing to us, so we do that kind of thing. So we've introduced kind of things to just reduce expenditure. And the last question that I think is outstanding was coming from the chairperson, why we transfer 170,000 rands to SACLAP. The SACLAP is an acronym for the South African Council of Landscape Architects Professionals. Now, as you may know, Chair and honorable members, the Minister of Public Works, as part of his mandate as a Minister of Public Works, is responsible for 6 professional councils in the borough environment. Yeah, he has an oversight role over those councils to make sure that they run, to make sure that they run the appropriate transformation programs and that kind of thing. SACLAP is part of professional councils. They were battling. Their member contribution could not sustain the operations and the offices and whatever. They made an approach to the department, to the minister. We then jointly engaged them for the national treasury, and that's the number we came to support them just to please continue operating as a council. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and members. Can we just go to slide number 6? I know INTIAS deals with this, but I thought it would help that we just revisit this again, because it's almost as if we preempted, you know, the question in how we have tried to simplify. I mean, on the left it's the department, on the right it's the PFCE, and the platforms in terms of the resourcing that straddles across is shared services, which is made up of finance and supply chain management. You will see targets in both the department and the PMTE. Corporate services, you've got governance, risk and compliance, and intergovernmental coordination. Then the three key programs, three core programs within the department is EPWP, property and construction, industry policy and prestige management. Yes, sir. And then you've got on the 25 programs, real estate investment services, construction project management, real estate management, real estate information and registry, and facilities management. So if you get this in read together with the annual performance plan, read together with what we are reporting, this is how they all come together, if I can just conclude on that note. The question around the lease renewal, I know we have been asked one or two specific parliamentary questions in this area as well. And I think the last question we got specifically asked us to provide the statistics around lockouts. And I don't even remember having dealt with all the regions in the last year dealing with a single lockout. I think as much as the lockouts were a part of the character of the department that we had inherited prior to the turnaround, I think I can safely say this is out of control in terms of getting our renewals on time. We have also, through engagement with the sector.
Do you think the chair, if I may? Just clarity there. As I recall, the question was, have you still got the month-to-month renewal system going? Because you're saying it's out of control, but is it not going to be phased out? What is the situation? Is this a very bizarre situation, Frankie?
So we do still have a few of the month-to-month leases, and there's a specific reason why we have the month-to-month leases. Firstly, it's on an exception basis. There are some real exceptions. Which we are dealing with. Secondly, we are just about to embark on an entire refresh of the process. We are implementing a whole
If I may, Mr. Scott, it would be easier from your side and also from the side of members to be a little bit more specific. When you say that there are still a few cases remaining where you have to maintain or retain the month-to-month lease situation, it's not clear to anyone posing the question. When you say a few remains, it means that you got rid of the majority. But it would be more helpful and clearer if you are able to articulate which are those two. Give an example. Then you'd be better understood.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll give one example. I will not mention the specific names, but we've got a significant example in Trent where we have the opinion that because that building is currently housing a strategic one of the parliaments, okay, that lease has expired. But at the same time, we are undergoing a process of renewing our accommodation management systems solution. I indicated that next month, which is September, we will be going out on an advert to advertise for a panel of accommodation services providers countrywide. So it will be one big tender that goes out to have a panel of landlords which will be refreshed regularly. So we will do it regularly. But the whole point of it is for us to make sure that the procurement process happens once a year. We have a complete panel of all our landlords in one place. We are able to, as a very large influencer of the property market, have sight of the market itself. It also relates itself to us being able to know how much we ought to be paying for the property in the areas that we are dominating. One of the examples that I can give is that if you look at the core of Pretoria, the CBD office space, we occupy in excess of 90% in office space. Now, if you do not have sight of the market, you are unable to make, firstly, development decisions to meet your user requirements. Secondly, you are unable to know, for the purposes of planning over the MTF, how much you ought to be spending for those leases. I've been asked the question around how do we manage the rates to be linked to the market. We will have the opportunity to have all of that information in one platform, which we say technologically we have built ourselves. So it will be quite a big revolution. But in the interim, the conversation that we have had with Treasury is to say, how do we deal with the one or two leases? There are not many that then expire while we are doing this process. Fortunately, what they've done is, as part of the new regulations, if we are deviating from the normal process, we need to notify Treasury and either need to confirm the process that we have followed.
Honourable Madam, just on the same issue.
Yes, on the same issue, Honourable Chair. No, we are asking this question with the understanding that the department had a lot of backlog of the leases that were not renewed. And most of them were month-to-month cases. So, because you can't respond on it now, maybe we'll request that we get a report also that is saying, this is the backlog that we had, this is what we have done, because just to stay under control, it doesn't give you figures. And we are doing oversight too. If we do oversight, we must know exactly what is this under control means in figures from the original backlog that we had. We are just requesting a report, not for him, because it's difficult to deal with this now, but that will clarify the outstanding or under control.
Thank you very much, Madam Madam. I can see Honorable Toile concurs with the ear-to-ear mic.
So you recall that when I was dealing with Program 4, I said of the 60 renewals that needed to be in the quota, we have renewed. So in terms of the processes, when the first dispensation came, I think there were roughly 1,680 that we had to process through the first dispensation. We checked it monthly by region, by landlord, all the statistics available, and I can readily make that available outside of the meeting in terms of where we are. Then there is the issue of the ability to do market analysis. Chair members will remember that there is a point in time when we reported that in February we would be launching a research unit. We did launch the research unit. We started by the end of February. They had a draft report. The market analysis for Pretoria had been done. We have done a market analysis for Johannesburg. We've done a market analysis for East London. We've also done a state of transformation in relation to our own portfolio analysis in that short period of time. That enabled us as well to judge the direction in terms of our procurement patterns as far as the leasing environment goes. There is a question that's been specifically asked that is, when you are presented with an opportunity to lease a property, how do you then determine how much should be paid for it? I guess there are two elements. Then your primary baseline is to do a valuation of the property. You then have to do an analysis to see how much the property is costing. I mean, you have to look at issues such as the rate you are paying, how much it's costing to secure it, and that gives you the parameters within which you can start negotiating with a potential lessee. The question around vacant land, I would like to end with a bit of an illustration that I also some of the work that we have done in the area, vacant land and buildings. The emphasis on the workshops is correct. I think where we started was we used the term resuscitation because the majority of the workshops were not functional. Now, the first step that we needed to take was to ensure that we emphasize the infrastructure spent in the workshops, aimed at ensuring that we meet the basic and minimum compliance, for example, OHS. So we have done it. We have got the workshops that are currently functional. The focus at the moment is on making sure that we are able to match the artisan skills development program with the requirements, for instance, of day-to-day maintenance within our environment. We are also looking at integrating with other programs of government to ensure the efficiencies are there. For instance, as you know, Defence has a lot of structured programs around day-to-day maintenance or unscheduled maintenance. So we have had discussions with them to start a program then last quarter or in the first quarter of the following year. We've also got in the pipeline programs that we'll be working together with the Skill Development Fund, which then addresses the question Honorable Matopo has asked around the TVET College. It brings that element in. We then have a planned program with the UIF, which is looking at the retraining of retrenched workers, providing them with skills that could be utilized in the area. EBSA, as an implementing agent, is assisting us with bringing the different elements together through program design, so the elements particularly around the funding of the program and ensuring that the program addresses the key issues around skills and requirements within our own portfolio. There's a question that's been asked, which then is specifically asking a question around the pace at which we are spending on infrastructure projects. It's just one of those things where timing sometimes just gets to us during the year, but in terms of the second quarter, we'll start seeing a bigger impact of the capital projects that are coming on board. If you relate the question to the responses that we've given around the sites that have been handed over, you'll recall that we also have been behind and have given the explanation. The explanation, in essence, was that while we are doing this, we are dealing with the inefficiencies of we are addressing the inefficiencies related to the FCM process by ensuring that by the end of the year, we've got panels in place to progress infrastructure-related procurement in line with the new standard. In terms of the job creation targets linked to it, we have significantly improved our ability to be able to formalize and check the number of jobs that we are creating through our own project. And in quarter one, relative to the previous year, I think we have done quite well. In fact, we have achieved in this third quarter. With respect to the process of disposal,
thanks. You are saying that in the next quarters it will be fast track. But when you put a target in the first quarter, you said you're gonna achieve 100%. Why do you make? Because you know when you plan that in this quarter, this is what you're gonna do. I'm not asking it in the other quarter. Because you have made target for 100% in the first quarter with the aim of achieving it. But if you are saying, no, it's because it will be addressed in the other quarter, why did you target something that is going to be achieved in the other quarter, in the first quarter?
Chelsea
is
the second year that the MC is reporting. On its own specifically around targets. So I will concede that in the planning cycle, when you are planning, you are quite ambitious about the state of your own abilities, particularly when it comes to the ability to process all of these procurement processes to be able to hit cycle time. Experience is telling us that we are a little bit out as far as that is concerned. But remember, a single project in our space is actually a high impact project in value. Now, what I'm saying is, in terms of quarter one, the projects that have not been able to hand over sites are the projects that are going to be coming in this quarter that have already started. We are handing them over in this site. So this part of the target will then start to show signs of improvement. We are now moving into the next planning cycle for the following year, and we have carried some of these lessons in terms of how we then shape our targets. I will be as friends to tell the committee, when we talk about issues of unscheduled maintenance, as an example, that is the one target that we really were quite off the mark with. In terms of where we started, that's why you will see those targets were sitting at about 10% in terms of achievements. Now, the simple answer is, in an environment like this, and we tested this methodology as well, in an environment like this, when you set your standards, you don't set the standards or the performance of your 100,000 buildings and your property portfolio. You select a number of buildings in a strategic area that are representative of the entire building spectrum. So hence we are saying in that area we have taken a view that for the next 180 days we are going to invest the time on 300 buildings to ensure that we have the performance baselines that we can measure the rest of the portfolio going forward. So it's those types of lessons we are learning as we move on. In terms of the process of disposal, I think the starting point is knowing exactly where you are. You know which buildings you require today, which buildings you will require in terms of your user asset management plans, which is the demand of your users in the next 3 years or so, our own requirement for the portfolio. We then need to ensure that and this is the business process. We need to ensure that before we dispose, we prioritize other programs of government. And in the main, we receive a lot of requests for human settlement. We receive a lot of requests for municipalities in terms of their IDP requirements. And effectively, that's before we start considering considering any of these properties as being surplus to our requirements. The second last issue I wanted to deal with is the unplanned event, according to the question that was asked by the chair, related to the June 16th celebrations. We had not planned for it because usually it's planned for under the Department of Arts and Culture. This year it was, we were requested to implement it by presidency specifically, as it was a presidential event this year. And that's the reason why we have reported it as unplanned. I wanted to just give you a bit of an indication. When I talk about some of the systems there, the vacant properties, you need my laptop. In terms of the vacant properties, we currently have 4,195 vacant land buildings. Now we've got it. We have a strategy to deal with them, and what we've done is we have segregated our strategy into the different regions. It has helped us a great deal because it has helped us to deal with our planning strategies around how we secure those properties. Number one, what are those buildings costing us when one does the cost versus benefit analysis? But what are the social implications of the lands that we have? I mean, you recall the most recent case is the case involving, I think it was in Krapo, fairly recently here, where we've had land invasions. Now, for us, it's an issue of saying how do we then proactively manage it country-wise, and as one of the risks that are there. There's also the phenomenon of, for instance, which is also having case, we've got a phenomenon of the forest villages that have also emerged, which have moved from almost being our own properties to being settlements themselves, which require a specific response together with other departments and provinces and municipalities. And I thought I'd just give you an idea here of how we have managed to integrate the strategy with some of the technology that we have. So if I refer to the issue of let me see if I can find Krapo here. Here, what's the stuff? Yeah, well, it's not here. Let's try this. There you go. So the green represents, my apologies. Where am I now? Yeah, I'm trying to see. Okay, yeah, I think I'm going to just put it in the center and... Yeah. Technology is beating me today. Can you see clear what this looks like? No? Sorry, I need to... Can you see it now? There we go. So we are able to zoom in and see where exactly, and this is just the part that deals with the Western Cape. So the green area there starts to depict. I think the green is not just the vacant land, but it's either agricultural holdings or farms. It's one of the two. But we are able to show that the where you see a black dot is a building that is vacant. So from the center we are able to have a national strategy, and the regional offices are able to then zoom in. We have been able to plot this using our GIS system that we implemented I think about a year ago, and it's integrated with the movable asset register, so it's continuously refreshed as far as that is concerned. So what we have here is just the properties within the Western Cape, but countrywide it's 4,195, and we do have a strategy to deal with that. Check. That concludes the responses from my thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. Honourable members, any further queries, questions? Honourable caller, Bunt.
I don't know if it's all been sorted, but last we heard there were still investigations underway, various investigations into corruption, improper conduct in supply chain management and various other issues all the way along. I think there were 19 investigations at one stage. Have they all been completed now? Is it done? Have the people been fired, dealt with, whatever? There's another stage. One of the ladies, as I recall, said, and they'd asked the Auditor General to investigate one of the matters of a number of people who'd suddenly resigned and disappeared, and along with hundreds of millions of rand. So I just wondered if we perhaps had an update on those cases.
Thank you.
Can I ask that we bring an updated report? I don't have the detail, but it's an ongoing for a whole investigations unit that deals with it, but we report on it regularly. I just don't have the numbers. In terms of that, I think it's just the route.
Okay, thank you very much. Enige verdere vrae, versoeke, klagte? Geen. Well, I see no further requests for input or comments. It seems we have gone as far down this road today as we can go. And then the outstanding issues, the department will come back to us. And if in the interim there's any issue that the committee deems urgent, we'll communicate with you for engagement, clarity, so that from our oversight role we can also be of assistance to you. Honorable members, thank you very much. PMT, thank you. And the delegation of 10 men from the department and one woman, thank you very much. And thanks to the parliamentary staff.